two. I just had some it's a little more than notes, kind of halfway in between some things I wanted to cover. I wasn't truly expecting to give one more, but I'm glad to do it. And service is always great for me. Last evening I berated the fact that I think half measures will do us nothing, and so I'd like to talk a little bit about what I believe some of the measures we need to do are. And part of some of this will be a little repetitive because I threw it in a little bit at the end of last night. But first thing is, my term is, you gotta wanna. That to me is the most important. You have to want to stop acting out. You have to want to gain progressive victory over lust and get sober. I don't know how many times I've heard in newcomers in meetings or people who are coming back and say, I have to stop acting out. I've heard all the reasons. My wife will leave me. My life's in a shambles. I've been in jail. I've spent all this money. I'm going to die from the disease. It's a sin in my religion. It's against all I stand for or believe in. And I know all those things are true. I mean, they were true for me. They were true for all of us. But that person is not going to get sober. The person who comes in and says, I have to get sober, they've known that for years. I knew it for years that I had to stop doing those things. It wasn't until I wanted to, until I have, well, I'll use the you, even though sometimes I don't like to do that, because I want to speak for the first, but you have to have that feeling deep, strongly inside, with every ounce of your being, that you want to stop acting out and get sober. And you have to want it because it's the right thing to do. Not because if you don't do it, if you don't stop, all these bad things will happen. We don't come to the program to keep our spouses, to keep our families, to keep our jobs, to keep our sanity, to keep our principles, even to keep our life. We do it because we want to do the right thing. I believe that that's what has to be there to work. If we then work these things and give ourselves completely over to this simple program, these other things will no longer be problems. They'll be byproducts rather than the product. But we don't work the program on these things, these unmanageable things. We work the program on ourselves because we want to. Similarly, we will not get sober if we are here because a spouse, minister, therapist, or judge says we have to come here or else. That's not going to get us sober either. It's fine. I've seen many times in AA when the judge sends people to AA, and 1 out of 10 of those people get it. So it's fine that they get you get to experience it and see it, but that isn't going to do it. But if maybe getting there and experiencing it and hear other people share who want it, then that can work for us. And I don't think it is until you want it for the right reason that you're going to get it. And then when you do, you'll feel that zing. I felt it. I had a buddy who came in the same time I did in SA. You know, one of these nicest guys in the world. 2 months sobriety, back out. 4 months sobriety, back out. After 7 years, he got it. And you could tell immediately that it was inside him, that he wanted it. That zing hit him. And I am very blessed, I don't know why, but I had that zing almost immediately, that I wanted it. I knew I was going to lose all those other things, but I wanted it. But that's not enough. You got to want it more than anything else in the world. More than anything else in the world. And I mean it. It has to be our number one priority. priority. It has to come before anything. And that sounds tough, it sounds unfair, it sounds unreasonable and impossible, but it's not. I mean, it is unfair, tough, and whatever, but we got a disease. There isn't anything we can do about that we have the disease. To me, it was obvious if I didn't make this my number one priority, I would never have all those other things that I thought at times I should have priority over. If I didn't make sobriety my number one priority, I would never have a wife and family to come home to. I would never keep a job. I didn't go through my story, but I had 17 jobs in 14 years, and these were VPs of this or that, you know. I couldn't keep any of those. I would never live long enough to have a healthy body. I would never truly be in church, or in my case, synagogue, even if I was there physically, because my mind was on the lust or whatever. So I can't tell you how many times in my lusting and acting out days I was truly with my family when I was there. When I was there physically, I went to all the little league games and all the school things and all that, but I wasn't there. And I was either lusting, or I was worried about being caught in a lie that I had told, or something else, or I was so full of anger or shame or guilt that I wasn't there, only my body. And even though my family didn't really know what was going on, they didn't know about my acting out necessarily, they knew I wasn't really there and around. They knew it, even if they didn't know it, it was very freaky to them. This didn't happen every minute of my family life, but as I got deeper and deeper in the spiral, it got more and more often and for longer and longer times. And the same could be said about all the relationships in my life, including my relationship with my higher power. I wasn't there. Now, I'm not saying that working the program, going to meetings, calling your sponsor, surrendering lust or whatever else you need to surrender are the only things in your life. We live in the real world. I'm not, you know, not that, whatever, hardcore. We still live in the real world, and we need to live in the real world. But I'm saying that any time there is a choice, any time, and we face these choices in the beginning 100 times an hour, any choice between doing what you know you should do for your sobriety and something else, you must make the choice for sobriety every time. And I'm not saying, you know, if in Denver there's 20 meetings a week that you go to every meeting and don't spend any time with your family. But if it's, oh, I'm too tired, or the family's grousing, but you know, I need a meeting, go to the meeting. The grousing and whatever will only get worse if you don't get the sobriety. You may say that this is not fair, it's not right, I should not have to give up time with my family or spend time working the steps instead of enjoying myself. In fact, that goes against my cosmic rules of the universe. And you're right. It's not fair. In fact, it's downright awful. But that's the way this cunning, baffling, and powerful disease has you in its clutches. I compare it to a leaky roof. We had a leaky roof in a house in Los Angeles. And whenever it rained, I never understood how the water knows exactly where, how to find that leak, you know, and go in there. It always, and not only that, it doesn't come out where it goes in, you know, it goes along the girders or whatever and comes out here. Well, that's kind of how our disease works. If we let the littlest opening up there, it's going to find it, and it's going to work its way through, and it's going to come out here, and you may not even put two and two together here, but it's because we left that opening there, because when we had the choice as to what we really needed and wanted to do, we chose Terry's cosmic rules of the universe instead of what it needs to do to get sober. And as I said, with hard work and work in the program, making those choices become second nature. They become a lot easier. You learn to do your time, you know, change some things around so you do have time for the family or do have time to play golf or whatever it is you like to do. But it takes a little time. In the beginning, you got to err on the side, always on the side. I don't call it error, but you got to go over on the side of doing what you need to do for that. God, I want it more than anything else in the world. And next, you need to be 100% vigilant. In the beginning, almost every conscious thought needs to include an awareness as to whether that thought or the act to follow will make it more likely I will act out. In the beginning of my sobriety, I was surrendering lust and other things 100 times a day. But I had to always be vigilant, always, about what's going on. Okay, lust. That's been one of the... I'm very grateful that I saw that lust is my disease when I came in. When I introduce myself at meetings, I first say that I am a lust addict, then that I'm a sexaholic. I do this because my drunkenness is on lust, not on the sex. I do this because never once in my life did I act out without it being preceded by lust. Lust was my drug of choice. The acting out was just the inevitable consequence of my lusting. Thinking that our sexual acting out is the problem is similar to thinking that fever is the problem of a bad illness. Certainly the fever can kill you, but it's the disease inside that's causing the fever. Coming to SA to simply stop acting out is like coming to an AA meeting to stop from getting DUIs or hangovers. Those are the inevitable consequences of the drinking. I've heard people come into me, I'm here because I'm getting too many DUIs or whatever. The DUIs and hangovers may cause some big problems, but it's the alcohol, or actually the allergy to the alcohol, that is the cause of the problem. As you know, I'm also an alcoholic and a drug addict. I know that when I was drunk on lust, I was just as stoned as if I had done 3 lines of coke or 6 gin and tonics. Worse, I didn't have the same telltale signs that could at least warn others to be careful. I know that I have come out of lust blackouts 4 miles down the freeway over 3 lanes and not remembered 1 second of those 4 miles on that freeway, what I did or anything. I know I've been so stoned on lust that I can't remember a single word my wife or child or boss or clergyman has said to me. I know I've been so obsessed with getting another hit of lust that I've put myself and others in grave bodily danger. I know that I got tolerance to lust, just as I did to my other drugs. And for those of you, I just think tolerance meant, you know, like I thought it was okay. It just means that we need more and more to get the same hit. That it took more and more. Oh, what do you know? But it took more and more to give me the same escape as before. But I had to have new and different types. That I had to isolate more and take bigger and bigger risks in the vain attempt that they would satisfy this insatiable thirst. I didn't see any of that until I got into programming. I didn't see that lust was the problem and that was what was driving my acting out. This was true especially of my masturbating. Before program, I had this insane belief that masturbating would somehow quench the fires for my sexual acting out. When all along, rather than quenching the fires, it was fanning them. I was just adding fuel, not removing it. It's amazing to me, this accountant here, that I masturbated over 20,000 times. And it never occurred to me that my old way of thinking wasn't going to work, that maybe on number 20,001 that it would be different. This was one of the easier ways, my old ways of thinking, to give up. So if lust is the true culprit, I must keep ever vigilant for lust. In the beginning, this was the most important thing for me, and it still is today. The only difference being that it's second nature to keep vigilant, and I have more tools to use for my vigilance, and sneak attacks come less often. And they are sneak attacks. I mean, it's really rare that I say to myself today, hey, Terry, I need an escape, or I need to cause some big problems in my life, so let's lust. Instead, I just find myself doing it. All of a sudden, I wake up, I don't mean from sleep, just wake up and say, and realize I've been looking in the car next to me. And I got to tell you, I say, part of my prayer ritual is on the way to work, driving in the car. I'll be saying prayers to God and wake up finding that I'm looking over in the car next to me to see what's there. That's after almost 16 years. So I've still got to be always vigilant. All of a sudden, I kind of wake up and realize I've been looking in the car next to me or obsessing on the outfit of a figure skater or hoping that a coworker will smile at me or remembering an old flame. Some S programs have a 10-second or 3-second rule about surrendering lust. I have a 3/1000th of a second rule about that. If I don't instantly, and I mean instantly, surrender the lust, I've had a slip. And even though I may call it a slip, it don't matter because it's going to be one, because the next time it's going to be 10/1000ths of a second, and the next time it's going to be 10 seconds, and the next time it's going to be 10 months. So I don't take that chance. If I don't turn it over to my higher power, my feeling is if I don't turn that over to my higher power immediately, I won't be long before I'll be dead. And that's where my first step is. I'm powerless over lust, and I will die. Because that's where I was going. I was going to, we don't have to go into the bungalow, that's a long part, but I was going to die. Some things now that I don't have written down, but just some things about what I think is, I'm going to tell you this and then correct what I said. Don't get a sponsor. Use a sponsor. I don't know how many people get a sponsor. Hey, Joe's my sponsor. Don't call him. Don't use him. Don't work the steps with him. And think, oh, I've punched that ticket. I can go now along to the next thing. Uh-uh. You are kidding yourselves. Use that sponsor. And even if you don't like the sponsor, you know, even if they make you or whatever, use them. And if you need to get another sponsor, fine, but not until... Don't leave the one until you've got the other. And usually if there's something about that sponsor you don't like, it's because they've got something similar to what you've got. And that's why you don't like them. I'm going to say one that is a little tough. I hear a lot of people pray for the obsession to be removed or pray to not be a sexaholic or whatever. I think you're praying for the wrong thing. Okay. The miracle is here. This program, this essay, is a miracle. God has given us the way to get recovery from our disease. And rather than pray for some zap of bolt of lightning to take this away, pray for the willingness to do whatever it's going to take to use the tools that God gave us. I know a man has prayed to fly, you know, be able to fly for centuries, for myths and all. And I don't know if the Wright brothers prayed to be able to fly or not, but I know that it was, I believe it was God that gave them the idea of how to build an airplane. But they had to try and work and work and put everything they had into it and fail and whatever, until it worked. It took years and years once they had the idea of how to do it. And then just look, I mean, 50 years after, from within 50 years, or within 60 years, you're on the moon. Maybe 70. So it takes the hard work. God has given us the tools we need. I'm not saying don't pray to God, but I think pray for the willingness to do whatever it takes. One of the other things I've seen in talking to and hearing a lot of sexaholics talk is, besides being addicted to lust, I don't know if it's an addiction or what, but I think we have this deep, deep thing about being self-destructive. I mean, we chose the type of disease, you know, I'm not saying we really chose it, but we could have chose alcoholism, or, you know, if you're an alcoholic, it's going to cause you a lot of problems, but if it gets found out, you're not going to get fired because you're an alcoholic from a job or lose your license. Now, you may get fired because of how you do your job because you're an alcoholic, but we chose the disease that if, or the types of acting out that if we get caught, almost immediately, the family's going to be gone, our place in the community is going to be gone, or whatever. And I don't know why, but I don't think that, I think that's something we need to take into account. And I say that because I don't know how many times I've heard it in a meeting. I don't understand. It was going so well. Everything was going okay for me, and then I just blew it. And I think it's because a lot of us say, I can say, you know, I can hear my father's voice. Terry, you know, good piece of so-and-so. You don't deserve anything good. You know, there's a voice inside a lot of us that say we don't deserve anything good. We need to do self-destructive. I can give you, I can work on a project, spend, you know, 3 weeks and do this terrific job that I know nobody else in our company could have possibly done. Turn it into my boss and tell him about the one tenth of one little thing that I'm not sure about, you know, that he never would have seen that or anything. I've just sabotaged that. Or sitting in a meeting, keeping my mouth shut, knowing that, you know, and all of a sudden spouting out, saying some dumb, stupid thing I didn't have to at all, and look back and say, well, that was about the one thing you possibly could have said that could have really screwed you up really good. And they just come out of nowhere for me. So I think that besides surrendering lust, we need to surrender this need, I don't know what you call it, to be self-destructive. And I think that that's really, really important. And I think we need to look at that. And I think if you do, I'm not a good one about journaling at all, but I think if you do consistent 10 steps and review your days and review them in a non-judgmental way, it's an inventory. You know, I'm an accountant. I take inventory. I don't say, oh, there's a good bottle of this, there's a bad bottle. You know, it's just 12 cases of this or 100 pounds of this. I don't make a judgment on it. If we could do the same thing with our own inventories, I think it would help them. And what I found is if I do that, I can see patterns and I can see things about the self-destructive and where it's leading. And then just the other, again, about another thing to surrender. As I say, what I've learned for me was, working my way back up the ritual, was the lusting caused the acting out. Feeling bad, less than, fearful of, or whatever, of something inside of me is what caused me to need to escape, and my natural means of escape was lust. So if I can be honest with myself about what's going on with me today, how I'm feeling about this or whatever, or even, you know, even afterwards, after I've out of nowhere, you know, yelled at my wife or whatever, or had a button pushed, to go back and look and say, oh yeah, you know, you were scared about being laid off from the job or whatever. You're fearful, and this is the result of that. Even if that fear or shame, as I say, is completely nonsensical, if I could be honest about it, I could say, oh, it's nonsensical. It's nothing to really be afraid of. But if I don't have that honesty, and if I can't look at that and say, I need to surrender that fear, I need to surrender that shame, then it's going to turn into lust. It's a lot harder to surrender the lust than it is the other, and then it could turn into the acting out ritual. That's about that's about all I kind of have right now. And so I don't end on a good crescendo there or whatever. But I'll be glad to talk to anybody. My email and phone numbers are there too if you want to talk when I get back to Moab or even North Carolina. Thanks.